Welcome to PATC Behind the Badge Uncut podcast. I'm Mike Heisinger, your host. I'm also an instructor for PATC. I instruct the FTO certification, supervising and managing the FTO unit, FTO leadership, and response to active shooter and terrorism. During this podcast, you will hear from other instructors for PATC, students that have attended classes, and how the classes have helped them to better serve their communities. You also get to hear from industry professionals and those that serve and honor the first responder community. There is a disclaimer. Since this is uncut, you'll probably hear curse words, cuss words, however you want to say it, from guests and hosts, yes, I'm guilty, from time to time. Some of the stories told may be too graphic for sensitive ears. Use caution. Welcome and enjoy. Here we go.
Mike Heisinger with PATC Behind the Badge Uncut. Today we are with Alan Goodrich of the Metro out here. We're at the conference having a good time, talking to all the different agencies and different classes that are going on right now. Alan wrote a book called October Strong. I'm really excited to read it. Just got my copy and it's signed, which is awesome. So I'm going to enjoy reading that this week and probably on the plane as well, because I am a slow reader, went to school in Tennessee. So some words I don't understand.
It's okay. In there.
There's coloring spots. That's good. Yeah. Good thing I'm not a Marine, right? Eat the crayons. So Alan, go ahead and introduce yourself and you know, where you come from, what you do.
I appreciate the chance to be here. It's really cool. This is not an unexpected surprise today. Got to walk me around and introduce me to some people, and there's been some great folks here. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
It's really cool. Yeah, my name is Alan Goodrich. I've been a cop for Las Vegas for coming on 20 years. I've had a really cool career and done some fun stuff, and everything that I've been a part of or been blessed with, like I've had this like imposter syndrome, like I can't believe that I got this job, you know. Anything from, you know, I was an undercover on the strip in the tourist crimes unit. I worked in the saturation teams. It's like a really proactive, you know, policing unit. I was a PD detective, like a generalized crime detective in a small area command. And then I worked a lot of informants in our central intelligence unit.
Okay.
What kind of all these doors that I went through and been a part of was just places that I got there. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm like, how did I get here? You know, and in the last, you know, several years I've been on SWAT. So just one cool job after the other. And Vegas has been nothing but awesome to me.
Yeah. I can never imagine working for an agency of this size. I think I was told last week or week before that Metro has 3,800 officers.
Yeah, I think so. Or yeah, maybe bigger. I think we're the second or third LAPD, NYPD. And then I think we're right there in the fourth or fifth.
Wow.
So it's busy.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's for sure. So talking about your book, The October Strong, I read the back of it, and, you know, I know it's all fiction and everything else, but I'm glad that you brought me up in here. Mike always dreamed of being a police and SWAT team officer. It's the truth. Yeah. That's not fiction.
No. Well, I didn't put those two together. Your name is Mike and Mike's the main character.
Right. That's just really super cool. I'm going to read it and I'm going to tell my wife, like, look, they already wrote about me, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I've actually never told anybody on any podcast or anything is kind of the origins behind Mike.
Okay.
You know, like, it is a fictional novel and it's based on a lot of things that I've seen throughout my career. So a lot of the stories have definitely like a true foundation and some truth behind it, but I am a pretty good embellisher.
Right.
So, the cool thing about being a fictional author is it's basically like a professional liar.
Right.
So I have the ability to tell a story and make it my own, you know, but just to be clear, the main character in there is not like the stories in there are not mine. They're stories of somebody else I've seen or a friend of mine, but the origins of the name Mike is like, you know, my, this is kind of funny, but my inebriated me, his name is Mike. And so my kids always laugh. They'll come into the room. They'd be like, is Mike here or is it Dad? And I'm like, no, it's Dad. I'm like, okay, let us know when Mike's here. He's funnier.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where we did get the name Mike, was just because of my partying moment.
That's funny. That's good stuff. So you work full time SWAT guy with Metro, and from what I understand, y'all get called out quite a bit.
Yeah, we'll average 350, 400 missions a year.
Wow.
So very high tempo team. We're, we spent time on the tactical side as well, so you know what we're doing. But for the audience that doesn't, we're doing the high risk search warrants, the barricades, the hostage rescues, and then a lot of specialized details in between. So it's very, right. Very busy.
Yeah, and especially being here, you probably get a lot of dignitary protection sets and that kind of stuff as well. Yeah. But yeah, it's always a good time. And talk about training. I mean, there's a lot of training that goes into being a TAC officer. The other stuff that you've done, there's a ton of training, especially UC stuff that you've done on the street, detective investigations, all of that has an immense amount of training that tools have been put in your tool bag that you can carry along with you and use in whatever aspect of the job you're doing or even after law enforcement.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a lot of cool opportunities for sure, but it's, having been on like the investigation side of leasing, I got to experience all that, and including the undercover stuff and kicking in doors. So like the whole variety of what you could ever imagine in a policing career, I got to experience it.
Yeah.
I feel like it was unearned half the time, but I still got to see it and be a part of it, and just blows me away that I was able to.
Right. Yeah. How much can we talk about the origin of your book?
Yeah, we can talk about that for sure.
Okay. So the book is called October Strong. It's on Amazon. Is it the only place you can get it? Is Amazon?
Barnes & Noble's Amazon. There was an Audible version, but we had some problem with the files. But anyway, it's pretty much, you Google it, you can find 100 places to get it. Walmart, I think even.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's kind of interesting how it popped up, because I never wanted to be an author. Was never something I envisioned myself being or doing. I am a big reader.
Right.
I don't watch a lot of TV, so a lot of my childhood or growing up was just in books. So I have a love and a passion for like reading and literature and art, but I never had a thought to write anything.
Right.
And then, I was involved in a critical incident 4 or 5 years ago, in 2020, and part of the processes you go on administrative leave and stuff. And so when I was sitting at home, I was struggling in my personal life and drinking a lot and doing everything you shouldn't do.
Right.
A good friend of mine basically convinced me to start journaling. And the journaling process kind of turned into telling stories, and that became my therapy, became addicting to me. And so that in essence is how it got its start.
Right.
Then I had great mentors along the way who put me in contact with the right people for the publishing, which is just something that, like I said, I never thought it would happen. But let alone, I had no idea it would even be successful. It's just something I wanted to do.
Right. Well, that's super cool. So one of the things that you do and have the connection for is working with Randy Sutton and the Wounded Blue, helping those guys out. And all of the proceeds from this book go to the Wounded Blue, correct?
Yes, it does. So all the money is going to the Wounded Blue, and always, and it has since the beginning. We've done pretty dang good on it. And like I said, I was kind of shocked that anybody would read it in the first place, and then
right.
That it would do well. But it's kind of cool to see what Randy's doing and his friendship and his connection that I have. I guess I'm a little spoiled because I can stinking text the guy and
right.
He'll reply.
It doesn't matter what time either with Randy.
He's a good man.
I was trying to look. I'm looking up on Amazon the October Strong book. Hardcover is $25. Paperback's $12.99, which is that's an awesome price for getting a great book as well.
Straight 5-star review, I can say.
Yeah. There's nothing in here that doesn't say anything about that. It gives any negatives. It's all great. I was trying to find out, see if there's actually a download amount, or how many have bought.
I know, but I'm not supposed to say.
Ah,
I actually get mad if I say.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to look and see if I could see, but I'm sure there's a ton of them
You know,
that have sold.
Who's been a really good helper to us, as well as a little shout out to USCCA.
Okay.
So for a while, they were giving the book to every new member they got. And, you know, they're a nationwide organization, so they really helped out a lot. And so when someone would sign up for USCCA, that's the insurance company, you know, for concealed carry. And Paul Martinez over there, just him and I got along, and he met me, and he's just really passionate about mental health and helping folks out, which has absolutely nothing to do with USCCA.
Right.
It's just his passion, you know. And so when him and I connected, he just said, like, I got an idea. Let's give a book to each member that signs up this year. And so they did, and it was pretty cool.
That's super cool. Yeah, for sure. Especially with everything going towards the Wounded Blue. And the Wounded Blue, if your listeners, the first episode that just dropped this last week in April, it was Randy Sutton, which is the founder of Wounded Blue and a Las Vegas Metro copper and retired. So he's a good dude. He was here at the conference for a little while and talking to all the classes and the officers and everything else about the Wounded Blue and the aspects of what goes on with Wounded Blue to help law enforcement officers nationwide. So,
I mean, I know everybody can see Randy and they can Google his name and see what he's about. And I'm sure everybody listening to your podcast already kind of got a feel for what he is, but like, I know the guy behind the scenes.
Right.
And the things that he does and the passion that he has, like, it's unparalleled.
Right.
First thing he does when he wakes up in the morning is checks his phone and he starts to work for, you know, for cops.
Like, right.
Hurt. That's his entire focus, and all the way to his last stop before he goes to bed. And I got to, you know, I have the pleasure of knowing him on a personal side, and that's all he does. That's all he does. So if you have this organization that's supposed to help out cops, if it's not ran by a guy like Randy, it's not going to run.
Right.
Because that's all he does. That's all he cares about.
Yeah.
He could do anything with his life, and he chooses to help out cops.
Right. Yeah, he helps out cops for no pay.
That's all he's doing.
Yeah.
first thought to last thought.
Yeah, it was solid.
24/7.
Yeah, solid guy. And he was supposed to be here yesterday, meet with us and talk to PATC about a partnership and coming to the conferences, setting up a table, talking to officers about Wounded Blue, doing his spiel, if you want to call it that, for everybody. And he wasn't able to make it because he got caught up in some meetings about helping law enforcement officers.
Yep.
And just like some pretty big names. I can't go into who they are or anything like that, but pretty big names, and they're wanting to help out. They're wanting to look to do something for law enforcement and different medical treatments and that kind of stuff. So it's definitely, he's pushing it in the right direction, and he does it with passion. So,
absolutely.
But on the same side, that's kind of what helped you in getting this book out there is Randy, right?
For sure. Yeah. He was, you know, like I said, he's always been a good buddy of mine. We've always been pretty close, known him for a long time. And when I kind of came up with all these stories, you know, I've read all Randy's books, you know, back in the day. I think that his first one was Cop's Life, I think Cop's Life was his first. I can't remember. But anyways, one of his early ones I read early in my career. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And then I read his other ones. And then, so I knew he was an author, and he was already a good buddy of mine. So I gave him the stack of pile, you know, stories. I was like, hey, dude, you're a writer. Tell me what you think of these stories. You know, maybe you can use them in like one of your books.
Right.
So I was trying to get him to like use some of my stories. And he's like, oh, no, he's like, we're going to publish this.
Right.
And here's who we're going to talk to. Talk to this guy. Talk to this girl. Talk to this guy. Talk to this guy.
Yeah.
Just set me up. And it was like one thing after another. I fell in line.
Yeah. And it helped you with your mental health or writing this stuff down.
Yeah, and that was, like I said, at the beginning, it was kind of a tip from a friend, which turned into me recognizing it. Hey, this was my thing. And then the weird part is at the end of it, now it's like people are reaching out to me, telling me what their thoughts on it are and how it's helped them improve their lives. That was something I was not ready for.
Yeah.
You know, to hear feedback on like, hey, this helped me. I'm like,
yeah.
I didn't. Ready to help you.
Right. I wrote it to help you. Yeah.
For my being and my purpose, I didn't write it for you.
Yeah.
So when people tell me it's like affecting them, it's almost hard, too hard.
Right. I mean, you got to think about those of you that are not in law enforcement and never been in the position that him and I both have been in and he's still in, the whole SWAT demeanor, the SWAT guy, the tough guy. aspect of everything and stuffing your emotions and, you know, moving on with the next mission, whatever else, that to have that kind of feedback come back to you, you know, that you helped me, you helped do something for me. You know, I read it and it made me realize, okay, I'm not going to do something stupid. Right. And it, that's impactful. It's huge.
Yeah. We live in a world, I just say, you know, not just SWAT. Yes. I mean, for sure. You're this, your atypical apex predator type A alpha,
right?
Male dominated industry. Right. But you know, just law enforcement in general or first responders or any of those folks, like the trauma everybody's experiencing, you know, for decades, law enforcement has been like, rub some dirt on it.
Right.
You know, tape it up, walk it off. Like, yeah. That's been the attitude towards mental health.
Yep.
And so if you were struggling, you know, they're like, what do we call it? Shell shock for yeah. Vietnam. And then, you know, they have different phrases for it all the way down. And now it's becoming, I think in the last 3 or 4 years, it's beginning finally a topic that people are interested in enough to be able to speak about it and openly.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, I don't have to go to my SWAT guys and be like, you know, put some dirt on it, you know, tape it up. Like I can be like, hey, like, that sucked, you know, like,
right.
I did not like that, you know, that outcome was.
Yeah.
That was not cool. Yep. And your boss would be like, you need to take the night off? And you're like, no, I'm good. I would rather be at work. I'm just telling you, like, that was hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And at times, I mean, you do need to take some time off, you know, and the bosses are coming more around to that now. They're like, oh, okay. I see what you're going through. I can understand what you're going through. And I know that, you know, we can give you some admin time. We can give you some relief, a little bit of time off, just kind of, you know, go through the motions of what you need to do to right yourself.
Yeah. I think the culture where they're looking at giving you the option to take time off or whatever it is, I think the culture has kind of shifted to where the departments and agencies are now interested in looking at, okay, how can we prevent this? You know, once they have it, how can we help them out going forward? So the ability to say it's okay to be okay is now something that is talked about. So whatever it is, time or, you know, clinicians or there, whatever, you know, now I think the last few years, departments are able to talk.
Right.
I don't want to say it's become a hot button, but it's definitely something that's more widely spoken.
Yeah. And you have your critical incident teams that are trained in your departments, peer support, peer-to-peer supports, and all that. With the Wounded Blue side of things, they're outside of your agency, completely and totally confidential. So if you have that distinction of, I don't know if I want to say anything to anybody in my department because I don't want to get, you know, put on admin leave. I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. Don't let that hold you back from writing yourself. Get a hold of Wounded Blue. You know, get a hold of somebody that you can talk to. If it's a therapist, if it's a psychologist, if you need, you know, in-depth kind of stuff, make sure you're writing yourself before something goes wrong, goes seriously wrong, because the mistakes can happen on the job when you're not in the critical thinking time. You know, you have that moment of lapse.
Yeah.
You know, because it can happen.
Yeah, he's got guys that are in his peer support team that have probably experienced some of the worst miserable circumstances.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's got people with shots that on fire. Like, people he has, they get it. So
right. If
you pick up that phone and you get a hold of them and you're going to talk about something, you're talking to people who they really get it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times you pick up that phone like I did. When I first heard about their program was in Vegas here at a conference. It was Canine Conference 3 years ago, I believe, and heard Randy speak. And I was like, holy crap, you know, there's something out there for us. Cause I didn't think there was anything and was trying to rack my brain on how to get something going to help law enforcement. And then when Randy spoke and I was like, okay, got it. Yeah, there it is. And I made a beeline for him as soon as he got done talking and said, we need to talk. We went out in the hallway. I talked to him about everything that I've been through, gone through, whatever. He goes, I'm going to get you with a mentor. So if you pick up that phone and you call, you're going to talk to somebody's peer support. They will get you with a mentor that has been through the same kind of crap that you've been through. So they understand, they know. And that was one of my biggest things about talking to a therapist. I don't want to go talk to a therapist that's been to college and not have a clue of what I've done, you know? So I mean, it was a huge impact to me and helped me.
It's funny when you're talking about how you ran him down and pulled him aside. Like, I know you and I were talking here, and somebody did the exact same thing. They ran up, hey, can I get your ear for a second?
Right.
What did Randy do?
He pulled up. Hey, stop. He stopped talking to us, stopped going to the classrooms, and just went over.
No, like, yeah. 20 minutes ago, but that's so typical.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, at times I'm like, you know, we got a schedule, and you know what? Screw the schedule. You do your thing, bro.
Yeah. What that person had to say meant the world to Randy at that moment, and nothing's going to pull him away from it.
Yeah.
And he takes attitude in it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, it seems we just physically met. We've been texting back and forth, talk on the phone a few times, that kind of stuff. But I mean, you have the same demeanor. You have the same attitude of, you know, somebody wants to talk to me, I'll talk to them, which is awesome. And I'm same way. If somebody's got an issue, they want to talk, I'll talk to them. I'll talk to them until I'm blue in the face, or my wife's yelling at me and she's blue in the face, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's sometimes it's hard because, you know, I'm kind of an introvert. So sometimes I don't want to talk to people.
Right.
But they're coming to me for a reason. And so whatever reason it is, it's important to them. And, you know, one thing that we only have a short amount of is time, right?
Yeah.
You know, I put a gun into somebody's head and I take their money, you know, I go to jail for a certain amount of time.
Right.
That punishment is like that time, right? So time is limited. We can't buy more of it. We can maybe earn more of it by eating correctly and working out, but time's limited. And so this guy needs 20 minutes of my ear. Like, this may be the most important 20 minutes
of his life. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm going to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you get down the road and they need more, or they have somebody else that needs help. They're going to reach out to you because you've already made that connection. They already trust you. They have that. You've instilled that trust for them to reach out and say, hey, I need, my buddy needs help. Can you help him? You know? And I'm all about that. Absolutely love it. And that's why the first person when, Katie Armstrong, the owner and CEO of PATC, was like, hey, do you want to do the podcast? I said, absolutely, but I'm not going to just talk to instructors. I'm going to talk to students. I'm going to talk to officers. I'm going to talk to, you know, get the real talk, you know, from everybody and not just instructors. I want to hear about their classes. I want them to, you know, push their classes, whatever, but I want to talk to the people that are still beating the streets, you know, that are running the badge, doing their job, and talk to people that support. And first person I thought of when she gave it to me, I was like, okay, Randy.
Randy.
I'm calling Randy. Yeah. Because I got his cell phone number, shot him a message. I was like, hey, running a podcast now. You going to be on it? You'll be first one? He was like, yep.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. But I mean, it's important for me to get that out there. Every class that I teach nationwide, I talk about Randy. I talk about the Wounded Blue, you know, and I have a segment of the class of, if you have mental health issues, if you have an injury on the job, anything like that, that Wounded Blue can help you take care of, here's our website. Reach out to them.
Yeah. Know? And if you don't believe me, try it out and call me a liar.
Right.
Like, you'll see. Like, they will pick up the phone.
Absolutely.
And if they can't help you, they'll find the help that you, they'll point you to the person who can.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't have all the answers.
No.
But they'll point you to someone who might.
Yeah. And if, I mean, that's a fact with majority of anybody in law enforcement that does any kind of training, any kind of aspect of it, is if I don't have the answer, I'm going to help you find it. We'll find it together, or we'll work on it together, you know?
And so it's going to be interesting to see where they're going to be at in 10 years, because I know where they were and I know where they're at. And with the culture that it's okay for us to discuss these things.
Yeah.
I mean, they were ahead of the game before it was popular to talk about this stuff.
Oh yeah.
And here they are still in it. So
yeah.
10 years from now, it's going to be pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, when I started in law enforcement, anything that I saw, anything that happened, anything I was involved in, it was, don't talk about it. Stuff it, you know, stuff the emotion, suck it up, buttercup, move on.
Yep.
You know, and it's like you said, rub some dirt in it, tape it up, whatever. But I mean, you were talking earlier, the backpack and filling the backpack up, you know, I can explain that to everybody.
Yeah. So a good friend of mine, Brian Murphy, he was the officer that was ambushed during an active shooter at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin. So he hears the call come on the radio. He shows up and he pulls up, and there's he sees right away a dead person, which ended up being two. One was just covering the top person, protecting them, and they both were executed. So he pulls up, he sees this, he gets out of his car, he looks towards the temple, and the guy walks out 50 yards away. Guy raises a pistol, one-handed, unsupported. His wings went off right at Brian, hits him. Brian falls to the ground, kind of shakes it off a little bit, tries to get his bearings about him. He's bleeding. The guy kind of circled to his side, fired another one, goes through his hand, you know, takes off his fingers, destroys the gun. And so now he's been shot twice, and he's scrambling on the ground trying to get the gun. The guy ended up working his way around behind Brian and just executes him, just point blank, just 14 shots.
Wow.
In the head, neck, throat, chest, arms, legs, hand, just everywhere. He ends up battling through and healing. And then after the healing process became his like emotional healing of the incident.
Right.
Now, Brian's a kind of a unique character because he is one tough son of a bitch. And not just physically, but mentally. So yeah. He was a Marine. He had a rough, real rough growing up, real tough family. He's a New Yorker, so he's got that New York attitude.
Right.
Mixed in with the Marine. Like, yeah. There is nothing.
I'm just going to say it like a badass.
Yeah. There is nothing going into that shooting. That guy on his mental mindset was just warrior mode.
Right.
And so when he got in that incident, in his brain the whole time, he's thinking like, this isn't going to kill me. Where he didn't give up. He didn't think, oh, he was hurt or help. He's just like, you can't kill me.
Right.
You know, just this crazy mindset. So anyways, he's that kind of a person. Where I cry when I get a paper cut. Right. So, but anyway, long story short, so he goes through his healing process and now he has to like work through the mental part of what had happened to him. And I'm at SHOT Show one year and Brian's similar to Randy and like you pull him aside, start talking to him, and you look at your watch and it's a couple hours.
Right.
And the guy's just filled with these like nuggets of wisdom because he's been there.
Yeah.
He holds the world record for somebody shot the most.
Wow.
And survive it. And anyways, on one of these like heart-to-heart father-son type chats, you know, he's a good mentor figure for me. He was talking to me about his trauma. He relates it to like a case. And he's like, you can't, you know, you put rocks in this case that he just carries under his arm. You know, you go on a dead body call, you put a rock in there. You get in a shooting, you put a rock in there. You see an infant drowning, you put a rock in there. And throughout your career, you're just constantly putting in these rocks in this case. Or some people call it backpack or whatever. But Brian said to me, like, look, I can't take these scars away. He kind of talks with a raspy voice because his vocal cords were cut. So he's like, you can't unburden these things that have happened to you, that you've seen, you've felt. It's done. Like, that happened to you. You can't unhappen it.
Right.
But what you can do is you can learn to put a lid on this case and not put any more in there. There's lots of ways to do that. He gets into different abilities and tricks to put a lid on it so none of these rocks get in there anymore. And then he talks about, look, now I'm carrying this case. I can't pretend like I'm not carrying this case.
Right.
Like, it's actually there. So I recognize I have it, and then I move forward with it, which means I have to strengthen my legs, I have to strengthen my back, I have to strengthen my arms, and I have to work on everything else around this case because I'm, you know, pardon my language, but I'm already fucked.
Yeah.
So let's try and make this better by strengthening everything else, you know, be it your family, your religion, your core beliefs, whatever it is that's going to help you carry this case, strengthen all those things. You can't unpack it.
Right.
And that's something I learned from Brian, which was just when I'm sitting there hearing him talk about that, I'm like, nobody's told me that? Like, why has nobody told me that?
Yeah.
Got all these things I'm putting in here and no one's just told me like, dude, it's okay. You're carrying this. It's fine. Like, yeah. It's part of the job. They don't tell you that's going to be part of the job when you're like, sign on the dotted line.
Right.
Oh, by the way, you're going to be a mental case.
Right.
The rest of your life. And you may live to 63, which is the life expectancy of a law enforcement officer.
Right.
63 years old.
Yeah.
They don't tell you that when you're brand new.
That's nuts.
You shine your badge, you shine your boots, you sit in the academy, and you're like, I'm ready to go and save the world. I'm going to take the incident. Oh, by the way, you're going to have heart disease.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you're going to have some mental scars.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you're going to work weird schedules and screw your body up for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you're probably getting divorced.
Right.
I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So it took somebody like Brian 18 years later to be like, it's okay. You're carrying this case, dude. Just recognize you're carrying it. Let's strengthen everything else.
Right. Yeah.
And then that case will get lighter.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's wild. I'd love to freaking have him on here.
I'll see what I can do on that side.
Yeah, see if there's a connection can be made, whatever.
I'll see where you're traveling, see if I connect to you at least. So
okay.
I'll get you home.
Either through, we can do it through the internet on the little
I'll make
platform
it
I have.
happen for you.
Okay, I appreciate that. That'd be awesome to have him on here, to have him, speak on that and speak about that. And I mean, it's impactful to me hearing it come from you, to have it come from the guy
The source.
that has the battle scars,
Yeah.
that has that, that mentality. And for anybody else that's listening to this podcast, that's huge. It's impactful to just have that knowledge, that administrators hear this. I want them to hear it,
Yeah, they're the ones who have the keys to the kingdom. But
Right.
one, and I hate to tell O'Brien stories because they're his stories, they're not mine.
Right.
But I like to tell them because, I learn from him. When he's telling me these things, I feel like I can talk about his experiences because it was something that I learned from, things that he taught me through his experience. When he got to go back, he had some, and you'll ask him the story, he'll tell you. And he went back for some function. I think it was he had ran into somebody who was a friend of a family member that was involved that day. And I guess he had been put in contact with somebody. There was a group of people that was hiding in a closet. And when Brian pulled up in his patrol car, they were hiding in the closet, and he was trying to open the door to that closet when Brian pulled up. So he took his direction off the people in that closet, went out and fired on Brian. And he hit Brian 14 times. There were 14 in the closet.
Wow. That's nuts.
And so when he's trying to get in the closet, that lady said, "How many times were you shot?" And Brian said, 14. She goes, "There was 14 of us in the closet."
Wow.
And Brian was just like, "Oh." So every hole he soaked up was
For
for
somebody.
somebody else, intended for someone else.
Yeah.
And he's like, "All right, I can carry this cross a little further."
Right, yeah.
Because every one of these alleys, you're breathing because of it.
Yep.
That's deep.
Yeah, that's real deep. Yeah. I mean, you can compare that to your book. It's been impactful.
Yeah.
It's helped. And people have told you it's helped. Talking to people, talking here, I'm sure it's helped somebody at least.
Well, it's opened up doors.
Yeah.
That's for dang sure. None of this would have been possible had I done it. And there was so much hesitancy at the beginning. I didn't want to come off as somebody who's like trying to be cool, like a Navy SEAL, and look at me, look how cool I am, and Billy Badass. No, it's the opposite of that. I was embarrassed to
Right.
do it. I didn't want to do it under my name. But I had to do it because it was the thing that basically saved my life.
Yeah.
And then the fact that now it's kind of opening up doors where we can discuss these things, and who knows, maybe there's somebody out there that I can talk to, and just like the guy recognized I was kind of in a bad spot, maybe there's somebody I can recognize. But this is providing that opportunity for me to talk to people.
Yeah. No, that's for sure. So it opened up another door we just discussed a little bit ago. Are you allowed to talk about that? The president spot?
Oh, sure. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm now the president of a nonprofit group called Gates of Healing. It deals with horse therapy and veterans with PTSD and TBI. And just full disclosure: one, I know nothing about running a board. Two, I know nothing about horses. So the fact that they picked me as the president of a charity when I'm not a clinician and I'm not a person who's a fan of therapy or therapists or horses. They picked me, and I'm like, okay, you guys really are scraping the bottom of the barrel. What I have learned, and this is all within the last 3 to 5 months, where I've kind of started to deal with these folks, is I went out to Temecula to meet some of the board members and the founder, and they took me to their ranch, and we're standing around, and the horse is kind of like running around and chasing people and stuff, or he's chasing around other horses, and the lady next to me, she runs the Igala training. So
Okay.
there's like a method that the military uses called the Igala method. And she's in charge of this. And I didn't know that she was doing this to me. So she was kind of like using me as a guinea pig. And she starts asking me questions like, "Hey,
Jedi mind
what
tricks.
happened?" So I'm sitting there just standing in the stall or in the corral watching this horse run around, and he's playing with the other ones. And she starts asking me questions about the horse. "Hey, what do you think he's doing right now?" I'm like, "Oh, he's just probably burning off some energy. He looks a little hyper." She's like, "What do you think the other ones are doing?" I'm like, "Well, they're annoyed by him. That's why they're running away." But she's like, "Okay." And then she would ask more questions about, like, hey, look at his head. Why is his head up right now? Or his ears are forward. What do you think he's doing? And so we just start talking, like looking at what they're doing. And then after a few moments, the horse kind of trots over and like comes over to me and get to pet him. And then she starts asking me questions. Why do you think he did that? And she's just asking me what I'm thinking about this. And why I tell you that is because when it was done, like I know nothing about riding horses. I know nothing about the animals, but you know, I'm petting them still. And I've gotten very good at recognizing my case since I learned those analogies, you know,
Right.
and learning about like, hey, sometimes I'm not feeling right. Sometimes I'm off. And I'm very good at introspectively looking and seeing like, hey, today I'm fucked up. Like,
Right.
pause. What, I don't know what's going on. Today's a bad day. So I recognize those days now. But I'm sitting there and I'm staring at these horses and like they go away and we go to lunch. And I'm like, holy crap, like I feel really good right now. And I'm like, those stinking horses. Like something to this. So I was sold right there. And I'd already said I would help just because, you know, for me, riding was my therapy. Some people talk to doctors, some people you fish, and some people hunt, some people work out. Maybe there's somebody out there who's tried all those things and they haven't worked and they get put into this horse stuff and they're like, that was my thing. And that was the whole reason I got into it, just because it may be the thing for someone. Maybe not everybody, but there's someone out there that this will help.
Right.
And it's been a pleasure to, I'm just getting started with them, but just to see, you know, even that side of the house, like I said, just blessings all around.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh. The snacks are out. So if y'all come to the conferences, there's in the morning, just to throw this shout out right there. In the morning, there's breakfast pastries. One of them, my favorite, is a Cinnabon, or not Cinnabon, but a cinnamon roll. Got cream cheese. So it's healthy because it's cream cheese, right? Dairy product.
Very.
Yeah, very healthy. Now they're bringing out the snacks for the afternoon. There's brownies, there's cookies, like several different types of cookies, some blondies. The brownies, you're going to get diabetes from it just right off the bat. I'm just going to tell you that right now, but it's worth a try.
I just got back from Tac Ops North in Syracuse, and the food and stuff they had there, it is not a Vegas show.
No,
Yeah.
not a Vegas show.
We're spoiled here.
The food here is awesome. So if you want to come to training just for the food, it's worth
It's, you're not lying.
it. For the food, the shows, bring money with you, not for donations, but for food.
Yeah.
It is no joke. Man, I appreciate you coming on and spending the day with us, basically is what it's turned out to be.
Yeah.
It's been awesome hanging out with you and getting to have you on the podcast and getting the book. I'm gonna definitely read that and have some fun with it. I will take it with me on my travels and share it. We can keep money flowing to Wounded Blue. And just get the word out there. That's very important to me. If that's all I can do, if that's my bit in the game, that's fine. Is just getting the word out there to everybody and doing it through this application here, the podcast. Again, it's Behind the Badge Uncut. If you have the inclination that you want to be on the podcast, you can always reach out at behindthebadge@patc.com is the email address. Shoot me a message and we'll start talking and see what we can get worked out. Hopefully I can get in touch with Brian, get that ball rolling. Anybody else you have that you think that might want to be on here, then I'd love to talk to them. One of the things I do want to involve you with in the future is I'm going to start doing a thing called Tactical Roundtable. There's a bunch of tacticians talking SWAT, talking tactics, talking training, talking active shooter situations, whatever else. But talking just different applications in the tactical world so we can get everybody on the same page and try to get a uniformity.
Yeah, well, you know, on that, you know, on the SWAT stuff, I'm probably like the world's worst tactician, and I'm, you know, as far as SWAT stuff goes, all the other guys probably look at me like, yeah, he can't even call himself a SWAT guy. I am on the team. I don't consider myself the pro, but I'll tell you what, we have some guys on our team that
Yeah.
I could definitely put you towards you. My ATO and the other side of the house is ATO, and probably two flawless tacticians I've ever seen, burned me by like just
Okay.
out of this world mindset. You know, I'm pretty good at my job, but those guys just
Yeah.
speak tactics
Yeah.
perfectly. I can put you in contact.
Okay. And at some point, get some of the Sierra guys in here. Get some of the Sierra guys on here. And the Sierras, for those that don't know, they're snipers, the observer sniper teams, and they have a different way of doing things. All across the country, there's a different tactic for the application. And in Las Vegas, a lot of urban stuff. You go to Tennessee, you're looking at a bunch of woods. Indiana, same thing, woods. Some urban applications. But, yeah, it's a different world for sure. You've been to how many schools?
A bunch.
Yeah, a bunch.
Way too many to not use.
Right. Right on. All right, Alan, I appreciate you being on here. This has been an awesome time getting to know you, getting to meet you in person, and we'll keep up the talks. And I'm gonna be out here in October. I'll probably be back out here in December as well. We'll link up and do something.
Let's do it.
All right. Again, PATC Behind the Badge Uncut. This is Mike Heisinger, and we had Alan Goodrich on the podcast. Remember, his book is October Strong. You can find it on Amazon. Probably at Walmart,
Barnes and Noble,
all sorts of places. Okay, all sorts of places. Google it. Yeah, Google it, look it up, get a copy of it, read it, enjoy it. And according to Randy, you'll end the book with a smile on your face. So that's always a good thing. So I appreciate you again, brother.
Yes, sir.
The Public Agency Training Council has two conferences coming up. Fall conference is October 27th through the 31st. And the winter conference is December 8th through the 12th. Both conferences are being held at the Flamingo Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Come out and get that knowledge. Learn from these amazing instructors. But remember, like, comment, and subscribe to the Behind the Badge Uncut. You can get online to register for these conferences at patceducation.com. Thank you.